To receive weekly mailings of Rabbi Mansour's tapes or to sponsor a tape, call 718-375-1023. To hear Rabbi Mansour's daily halakha or to search the rabbi's database of halakhot, visit www.dailyhalakha.com. That's DailyHalacha.com. And now, Rav Mansour.
Baruchim Abayim Rabotai. We have a statement that comes from a Gemara in Megillah. The Gemara states, "Mishenichnas Adar marbim b'simcha," that when the month of Adar enters, for the next few months, for Adar and Nisan, because of the historical events that took place, Purim and Pesach, so we have an obligation to be a little more b'simcha than we are supposed to be all year round. It's implicit that happiness is an all year round trait. It's just that they want you to turn it up a little in Adar. Now, it interests me that the rabbis are assuming we know how to acquire happiness. That they're not telling you. They're just telling you the happiness that you have all year round, if you can turn it on a little higher in the next few months, it's recommended. But they leave, how do you become happy? You know, a question that boggles everybody's mind, anybody living on planet Earth, it is the most pressing question. How do you become happy? What leads to happiness? So before we can go start and analyzing marbim b'simcha, we have to analyze simcha on its own. Joy. And it's clear that happiness is a very basic emotion. Every healthy child is born with a tendency to be happy. You ever notice it doesn't take too much to get a child to smile. You make a couple of funny faces or some sounds, and it's easy to elicit a smile from the child. It means it's natural. And God forbid if a child doesn't smile or laugh, that's indicative of a condition. That God forbid he needs medical help. Religiously, happiness is also vital and essential. David HaMelech said, "Evdu et Hashem b'simcha." Serve God out of joy. He didn't say serve God. That's not enough. David HaMelech's chiddush was you have to serve God b'simcha, and without it, it seems the service of God is flawed. I remind you of the 98 kelalot, God save us, that are written in Perashat Kitavo. And right at the end of those terrible curses that God predicted over the Jewish people at the times that we don't follow the Torah, he tells us the cause. And the cause is written, Tahat asher lo avadta et Hashem Elohecha b'simcha. Imagine that. The Torah hinges all the kelalot in Kitavo, not because we didn't serve God. You're talking about a generation that serves God. But they didn't do it b'simcha. It wasn't done with joy and happiness. That's how serious simcha is to our religion. Without it, it's a bankrupt religion, and God forbid can be the catalyst and cause of great calamities, Zachman Silan of Kitavo, like we saw. That being said, we must say that there are times where happiness would be inappropriate. God forbid when calamity occurs, public display of joy obviously would be out of order and uncalled for. It is for that reason Rav Shimon Schwab, Zecher Tzaddik Livracha, compares happiness and simcha to a pilot light in a gas range. He says it should always be present. But sometimes you turn it up higher and sometimes you turn it lower. But the pilot light always has the flame there. That's happiness. It's a 12-month-a-year constant emotion. In the month of Adar, you turn it up a little. Mishenichnas Adar Marvim Bisimha. In the month of Av, we turn it down a little. That being... Oh, but it's never turned off. Right, the pilot light is on, you turn it down. Mishenichnas Av, Mima'atim Bisimha. It doesn't say Mefsikim Simha. Mima'atim means you minimize. You know the famous story of the kid that came home from school and he was in a very hyper mood, bouncing off the walls, jumping from the ceiling, and excited. And his mother says, what's going on today? He says, we learned in school, Mishenichnas Adar Marbim Bisimcha. You know, it's Mizvah to be happy this month. Halakha. So mother has a hard time answering that. And then he goes into the candy closet and he starts eating lollipops and licorice and all sorts of sweets. His mother says, what kind of business? You know, we don't eat candy during the week. He says, Ma, I told you. We learned in yeshiva, Mishenichnas Adar Marbim Bisimcha. The mother can't answer such a claim. It's the law. And then he goes upstairs, instead of doing his homework, he puts on his Walkman and takes out his Game Boy and all of his other entertainment. And his mother says, what kind of business? You got to do your homework. And I told you, Mishenichnas Adar Marbim Bisimcha. Don't you understand this? And then he looks out from the window and his father's pulling up in the driveway and he's all scared and he runs downstairs and puts on his suit and he gets out the Gemara and he starts learning on the dining room table Gemara. So his mother says, what happened to Mishenichnas Adar Marbim Bisimcha? He says, Mishenichnas Av Mima'atim Bisimcha. So you see over here, the emotion of happiness must be tempered certain periods of the year and must be exaggerated or elevated other times of the year. Now we're in that time of the year of Marbim Bisimcha. The United States of America, from their holiest documents, is a Declaration of Independence. Of course, written by scholars, brilliant people, that in this document they list for us the three inalienable rights that every American has. And the first is life, and the second is liberty, and the third, which is actually a stroke of genius, the one that authored this, the pursuit of happiness. Now I say a stroke of genius because there is no other phrase that capsulizes what motivates people throughout their life. The pursuit of happiness. It is what consumes people from when they wake up in the morning till they go to sleep at night. All the hours that they're awake, they are looking for happiness. They're pursuing this elusive matter called happiness. And that's their right given by the Constitution. And people are pursuing it. My question is, how many in America have actually found it? They're pursuing it? There are millions are pursuing it. But we live in a society where depression is a very common disorder, where Prozac and other antidepressants are being dispensed regularly from pharmacies, where there's a suicide rate in the country that's substantial, and in general, people are not happy. Pursuing it, yes. Found it? Unfortunately not. Imagine if we tonight, with the help of God, can answer this question definitively. What is happiness? Where to find it? How to accomplish it? What is that worth to you? What is that worth to anybody? I mean, how do we bless each other when we see, you know, health and wealth and happiness? Somebody told me he doesn't bless health, wealth, and happiness. Wealth. I told him www.com. It's a wealth. But you see over here, the approach we're going to have to take, we're going to have to find an answer in the Torah, which is ultimately an answer from God Himself, what brings happiness. So the approach is we have to find somewhere in Tanakh where we clearly found that people were happy, and the Navi is going to say that these people were Sameya. And then we have to analyze what brought them the Simha, and bingo, we package it, we market it, we sell it, and we're on the road to Simha. With the help of God, I found that Pasuk. The Pasuk is written in Sefer Melachim, Perek Aleph, Perek Chet, I'm sorry, Melachim Aleph, Perek Chet, Pasuk Samechet. The backdrop to this Pasuk is the inauguration ceremony of the first Beit HaMikdash, which was built by King Solomon himself. It was from the most magnificent structures ever built, undoubtedly in its time one of the wonders of the world. How much money was spent on it? It was a project that lasted for 7 years. There was 150,000 workers that were working on the project at all times, imported cedar wood and birch wood, and everything was inlaid in gold and marble. Shlomo had no budget on the Beit HaMikdash. And when it came to the completion, Shlomo made a party that lasted for 7 days. Actually, it was in the month of Tishri, during Aseret Yemei Teshuvah. That's when the 7 day party started. It ended right before Sukkot, so they went into Sukkot for another 7 days, and then they had Shemini Aseret. So it was seven, and then another seven plus another one. It was a 15 day event in Jerusalem at the Temple Mount. And then the Navi tells us, after 15 days of this party, half inauguration, half Sukkot, they went home. But the Navi says, "Vayilechu le'aholehem simehim." Oh, they went home happy. Bingo! This is it. If we could just find out what brought them that happiness, we can accomplish this. Comes the Yalkut Shimoni and says, Simchim shenehenu miziv ha-shechina, because they were delighted in the radiance of the Shechina. Now that's a little above my understanding. What does it mean, delighted in the radiance of the Shechina? I oversimplify things so I can understand it. The Yalkut is telling me the source of their happiness was of a spiritual type. It was something of the religious nature. It was a pleasure and happiness that emanated from God. That's what made people simchim. Now, if the Navi is telling us that they were simchim, it's fair to say that this is the true meaning of simchim. We would never be able to make an assessment if somebody is really happy or not. You know, you can see a guy at a party and he's dancing on a table and he's going wild and he's screaming and he's shouting and he's drinking, and you say to yourself, you know, this guy's happy. And then we realize that the guy's a manic depressant, and this is the way he's venting his frustration out. He's the most unhappiest guy. Comedians, for example, you know, most people that don't know would think that comedians are just happy people. And then you read the lifestyles and the events that take place to a lot of comedians, you find out that they're not happy. Many comedians tried to commit suicide several times. So therefore, it's hard for us to judge who's really happy, who's not happy. You see Bozo the Clown in the circus with an orange nose and purple hair walking around with 6 foot shoes on, 10 foot shoes on. You say, well, polka dotted clown suits. Well, that guy's happy. You don't know that. He can take off the funny nose and he's a bitter, angry, grouch old man. But he just needs to make a living, so he dresses up like a clown. So it's hard for us. We cannot make an assessment. How many times you see a couple walking in the street together? And you see them, and you look at them in your mind, you say, wow, this is a beautiful couple there. Look at this shalom that's amongst them. Look how they're getting along. And you find out 2 weeks later they're getting divorced. You say, what are you talking? I saw them the other night. They look so happy. You see, we cannot know who is truly happy and who is not happy. That's why I quote for you a pasuk in Navi, which is written by a prophet, which is divinely inspired. So therefore, if the Navi is telling us these people were simihim, it's not a facade, it's not superficial, this is the real McCoy. Hence, this is the greatest proof you could bring. And it emanated from spirituality. So comes Rav Pam, Zecher Tzaddik Livracha, on this piece, and he says, how do we know? He challenges it. How do we know they were happy from spirituality? Maybe the source of their simcha came from the food that they eat. After all, for 15 days, they're eating meat, they're drinking wine, and we know that there is something to say about eating meat and drinking wine. It does bring a certain amount of happiness to a person. So maybe it was the food. Maybe the sauce was culinary. Says Rav Pam, can't be. Because the participants at this party came from all over Israel. Some came from cities that were close to Jerusalem, and some came from cities that were hundreds of miles away. Certainly, it might have taken 3 or 4 days for some people that lived all the way in the north to get home. But the Navi says, 4 days later, when they got home, they were happy. If the whole happiness emanated from food, the pleasure of food does not last for 3 or 4 days. You know, such a pleasure doesn't linger. You know yourselves. How long could you talk about dinner for? You know, 3 days later, you say, ooh, that steak, you know, that steak. It's over, that's it. After you had the steak already, you could talk about it maybe during dessert. It's a fleeting pleasure, eating. I'm not saying it's not pleasurable. I always felt that it's too much preparation that we do for it, and we're getting a little out of it. You know, we get all dressed up and we shower. It's like a whole ceremony to go out to eat. And after we prepare for this indulgence, we drive to the city, so we're investing hours and hours. But if you think about it, if you have a stopwatch at the table, pleasure time of eating, how long is the pleasure time? Not talking about when you ordered your food and you said, no, take it back. I didn't want it this way, I want it that. Until you get it right. And they finally bring you the final, they bring you the meskana. They bring you the bottom line. They bring you the halachal ma'aseh they put on the table. I'm talking pleasure. So you bite, now stop the clock. 2 bites, pleasure. After 2 bites already, the taste is gone. So now you're on the next bite. Stop the clock. In a meal, enjoyment time, it's probably 2 or 3 minutes. So that's a very, yeah, I'm not saying it's not enjoyable to eat and have food. That's a fact, we're human beings. But Rav Pam says that could not have been the nature of what they were happy about, especially 4 days later. You know, and what happens usually, after the meal's over, the reaction of the people usually is, I ate too much. I shouldn't have eaten. If I could do it all over again, I wouldn't have ate. It's a mistake. It's already at the table already your simha, your euphoria of dinner turned into a calamity. My stomach's killing. I can't move. I can't wait. So that's not simha. And eventually every meal ends up with Birkat HaMazon, but there's a beracha after Birkat HaMazon that every meal ends up with. That's Asher Yatzar. And every meal ends up in the same place. So therefore, Rav Pam says, that can't be the nature of this. You're not talking about people that came home 4 days later and they're still talking about the filet mignon that they ate in Jerusalem. Or the cup of red wine that they had. So must be, he says, it was of spiritual nature. Because a spiritual pleasure or experience, for that matter, a religious experience, stays with a person. And it brings a certain contentness that lasts. It creates a certain state of mind and state of being that's not fleeting. It's permanent. It becomes part of the person. So we have the answer to our question. Congratulations. Now if I would bring you another proof, if I could bring you a proof from the smartest man in our generation, I'm sure you'd all be eager to hear his opinion. I'm going to do better for you. If I can bring you a proof from the smartest man that ever lived in the history, this planet, the smartest, most bright, brilliant man that ever walked this face of the earth, Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon. If I can give you a class, paraphrase a class that he gave in his time that answered this exact question, how much money is that worth to you? You have an option. You can go to Park Avenue to a psychologist. They'll charge you $500 an hour. And they'll tell you that the reason why you're not happy, it's not your fault. It's your grandmother's fault. It's your great-grandmother's fault. It's your dog's fault. It's your Gilgul's fault. It's everybody's fault why you're not happy. So they'll tell you why you're not happy, but they can't tell you what's going to bring you happiness. Now, if I could tell you, listen, I could get you an appointment with Shlomo HaMelech, and he's going to give you his advice. What is it worth? Yeah, unbelievable. Shlomo HaMelech. So he answers this question in Kohelet. In Kohelet, he says, and I quote, Ra'iti et kol ha-ma'asim shena'asu tahat ha-shemesh. Shlomo HaMelech says, I saw everything that was created under the sun. My assessment of it is, Vehineh hakol havel ur'ut ruach. It's all vanity, it's hevel, it's wind, it's valueless, it's a waste of time, ur'ut ruach, it's hawa, it's air. I say, hold on. You're telling me everything under the sun, this whole world, materialism, because I would have made that mistake. I would have said, materialism is definitely something that can bring happiness. It certainly brings convenience to a person. We cannot deny that. Money definitely brings convenience to a person's life to a certain extent. A person can buy a car, he doesn't have to walk. Everybody's freezing in the cold, a guy can afford a car, a guy can go on a vacation. We're not talking about now the conveniences that money can offer. Or materialism can offer. Comfort it can offer. We're talking about happiness. So Shlomo says, I saw everything under the sun. It's nothing. It doesn't do it. It's wind. It's ruach. Now when people on earth talk like that, usually it's because they're jealous and they're have-nots. You know, so when a guy starts saying, these guys go on with the vacation, they're wrong, they shouldn't go, it's a waste of money. So the way many people react, this guy's just jealous because he can't afford to go to Aruba. But get this guy a ticket to Aruba, he'll be the first guy there, and he'll be on the beach with everybody else. So this guy's just burnt. You know, you have the guy that comes along and starts to philosophize, I don't buy Mercedes because he gives you a whole speech with Hitler and the concentrator. He gives you a whole schmooze about it. And then the guy walks away, who heard the whole schmoo, and said, this guy just can't afford a Mercedes. You know, if he had the money to buy it, he'd have a stretch limousine Mercedes. So the guy's, he became an idealist because he can't afford it. That's how people react. So Shlomo HaMelech is coming along to say, the whole world's a waste of time. So you say, okay, rabbi, wait, of course we're rabbis. Rabbis don't have anything. So, you know, they speak against Olam HaZeh, because they're making a meager salary, and they're driving an old jalopy. So, you know, there's a little, sarcasm that they have, because they have nots. Now, that's not Shlomo. Shlomo was the wealthiest man of his time. Shlomo had everything. Shlomo lived in a palace that took him 13 years to build. So you're talking about a man that had the whole world at his fingertips. As I said, he employed over 150,000 workers. Now, he had winter vegetables in the summer and summer vegetables in the winter. His table was never lacking. He had money. He had 1,000 wives. And that alone should tell you how much money he had. So you see, Shlomo, after having everything and experiencing everything and seeing everything, now we'll take his comment about it seriously, because he's not talking because he's bitter. Shlomo says, I was there. I know it better than all of you. I had things that you'll never have, and I'm telling you, it's a waste. It doesn't do it for you. It cannot bring happiness. Heaven or utruach. And we know that to be true. If you take a minute to think about it, you say he's right. The Gemara writes regarding money. And you have to be very careful when you talk about money, that nobody should get the impression that money is a bad thing. Obviously, it's a necessity of life. We've said many times, and any rabbi that comes along and says, you know, money's bad and it's evil, so after the class, go to the rabbi and say, you know, Rabbi, I want to save you. Give me all your bank account numbers and give me your checkbook and your credit cards, because Chas v'Shalom, I don't want you to, you know, get caught up with money. It's so bad. We're talking tonight that the Gemara says the nature of it. Yesh lo maneh, rotze matayim. That's fact. If you have 100, you want 200. Now, that's a formula. That's like 1 plus 1 equals 2. That's going to happen. Even though you think it's not going to happen to you. And the guy says, that's not me. You know, if I just had $1 million in the bank, I'm good. At the interest, I'll set it up like that. I'll join the kollel. I'll learn 10 hours a day. I'll go to the mikveh 3 times a day. I'll go to Israel 6 times a year. I'll wear 35 pairs of seats. I'll grow my peot to the floor. Just give me $1 million. I'm good. And then he makes $1 million. And then he says, you know, I'm still committed. I'm at the kollel and all that, but I just need the 2 million because, you know, $1 million is not enough. And the rabbis tell you, we told you so. And he said, yeah, but this time, I'm telling you, 2 million and that's it. Done. 20 hours in the kollel all day long. Maybe I'll fast 3 days a week also, but what I got to eat for? I'm going to just be learning all day long. And then he makes 2 million. And something happens. It just, once he makes that number, he wants 4 now. And the rabbis tell the guy, we told you so. And he keeps on thinking, but the next time's going to be different. They're telling you the nature from the answer. Yesh lo maneh, rotzeh matayim. So it can never bring happiness, because you're never satisfied. Then the Gemara goes further and says, En adam met, v'chatzi ta'avato b'yado. Person doesn't leave this world with half his desires in the bank. He doesn't die with half what he wanted. So I once saw a nice insight on that Gemara. It says if he has one, he wants two. And if he has two, he wants 4. But he has two. Two is half his desires. So it should say he dies with half. The Gemara says, no, he won't even die with half. But mathematically, the Gemara doesn't work out. So the explanation is, you know, if a 16-year-old goes to his father and says, Dad, I have my permit, I want a car. You know, so the father goes out and buys a used car for the kid, and the kid's thrilled. You know, all his friends are riding bicycles, and he's riding a car. Then he gets 17 years old, and he goes to his father and says, Dad, I want a car. He says, wait a minute, you have a car. And what's the kid's response to the father? You call this a car? This is not a car. This is junk. This is not a car. So you see what happens to the human nature. Once he has his mind set on the next goal, what he has is worthless. So the fellow that has 100 and wants 200, when you ask him about the 100 he has, what does he say? I have nothing. What's $100? What's 100? Could you live on 100? So therefore the Gemara is correct when it says he won't even die with half. Because what he has is valueless. So it's obvious that money alone, the pursuit of it, leads to futility, leads to depression. Depression means, very simply, when a person has aspirations and a person sees exactly what he's accomplished yet, and he sees the distance between what he accomplished and what his aspirations are, that's the hole, that's the gap where people fall into depression. And money is one of those things where you can never have enough of it, so the gap is always there. Shlomo HaMelech was so right when he said, Hevel Rot Ruach, everything under the sun. Go to a mall one Sunday and you see thousands of cars filing into the mall. And everybody has one kavana. They're all going with the same intent. They want happiness. So they're going into the mall and they're looking. Like hide and go seek. Everybody's looking. What are you looking for? I'm looking for happiness. And they go into the stores and they see things. Big things, small things, colorful things, stuff, items. And after a long day at the mall, everybody walks out with bags filled with happiness. And everybody's happy. You look at them, they're smiling. And they come home and they open it up. And Le'yudim, Aita, whatever, Simcha, Zeh Yom Asher, Asaseh Hashem, Nagila, V'nusmehabu, everybody's looking, unbelievable, Shehayanu, call them up, I got it, I bought it, it's unbelievable, it's great, fantastic. And the truth of the matter is, you're happy. Go to the mall Monday morning, and you see the same cars filing back in, the same bags filled with happiness. And they go to the clerk, and the clerk says, I'd like to return it. And the clerk says, why? What do you answer the clerk? I'm not happy. But you're not happy. Yesterday you bought it, you loved it, you said this is bliss, this is utopia. You were euphoric. What happened? Well, you say, I got fooled. You know, I thought this was it. And then go next Sunday, the Sunday after, what happens? They don't learn from their mistakes. They go again. And even if you're too lazy to return the stuff you bought, but eventually you just fall out. I mean, the first day or two or a week, it becomes this is the thing, and then after that, it's in the closet somewhere, it's in the basement. And what looks so appetizing at one point in your life becomes junk. It's amazing, it turns into junk. You put it in the basement somewhere in a closet, you can't even look at it. You just don't want to throw it away because you paid money for it. So you have to wait for the statute of limitations, and then once that's up, then you can get rid of it. So again, you see, materialism, it doesn't bring happiness. Problem with a class like this is, I can bring you from Shlomo HaMelech, I can bring you from the Navi, I can show you how these things do not bring it. But people don't like the answer that we're giving here. You're telling me it's religion and it's spirituality, and by nature we're inclined to resist spirituality and religion. Why? Because we think it's going to infringe on our happiness. So you see the catch-22 over here? It's proven to you now. Now we're giving facts. This is the facts. But a guy can't walk out of there and say, I got to be more religious, because he thinks religion, it's restrictions. Don't do this, do this, can't go there, can't look at that, can't say this. But you're telling me that's where happiness is found? But I can't do that because it's going to ruin my happiness. But I'm telling you that other stuff is not happiness. I mean, so you see where we're caught? The answer to that paradox is that you're 100% right. From your vantage point, looking in at religion, Religion definitely gives that impression. It's like the example that they say of the fellow that was, he had a water cooler in his house. We don't see it too much in New York because supposedly we're supposed to have good water. But in New Jersey, where the water is filled with all chemicals and you can taste it practically. So you have water coolers. And it comes in bottles of like 6 gallons. And one of the most annoying and back-breaking tasks is to change the water bottle in the cooler. And you know, you dread to do it. You know, it's been empty for 3 days, and then only because of the necessity that you have to drink, and nobody else is doing it. You know, you in your back of your mind, you say it'll be handled. You know, so somebody, the malach, will come down and change it. And then you come to reality, and you say you have to change the thing. Usually, the wife brings the husband to that reality. So you try to carry this thing of 6 gallons of water, and it weighs I don't know how many pounds. Until you get it up the steps, and you're making vows that you're never going to do this again, and it's haram, and you know it's not it's not right. And then you turn it over, and half of it falls on the floor. Until you get it in the thing, then you have to recuperate for a couple of hours. 6 gallons of water. The same guy goes on a trip, and he's swimming in the Gulf of Mexico, and he's underwater. And he has on his back millions of gallons of the Gulf of Mexico on his back. He's under the water. And he comes out refreshed. And he comes out relaxed. 6 gallons of water put him out. 1 million gallons in the Gulf refreshed him. How do you explain it? Explanation is very simple. When he was swimming in the Gulf, he was in it. And when you're in it, you don't feel it. When he was carrying the 6 gallons of water, it was external. The water was besides him. And then it's difficult. When religion is experienced through the eyes of a spectator, so it looks difficult. It can't be. I don't know how they do it. It's so difficult. It's restricting. It can't bring happiness. But to the fellow that's in it, he's happy. It's great. It always bothered me, the attitude of people when they see a religious guy getting up early in the morning to go to synagogue and to go to shiur and coming home early on Friday. So, you know, the secular guy comes along and says, you know, I give him credit. Who's asking you to give me credit? What do you think, I'm a hazit case? You think I'm a miskin now? What do you think, I'm a client of Bikur Ali now you made me? I became a. I need your credit. Don't give me credit. I don't need your credit. I'm happy. If they're looking at it as you're a martyr. You're willing to suffer. You're willing to endure all hardships for God. It's praiseworthy. And we smile back and say, what are you talking about? Oh, it's fantastic. I can't live without it. You're going to tell me live without a Friday night? I can't do my sale. How could you dream without a Shabbat? How could you dream without a Pesach? How could you imagine living life without a Sukkot, without checking an Ulav, without going to Gemara, without learning? It doesn't stop. But to the one that's looking from the outside, he can't understand it. So you're right. Theoretically, this class makes no sense. This is a class where philosophically and intellectually it's inexplicable. The answer must be what David HaMelech said, Ta'amu ur'u ki tov. You just have to taste it and then you'll see it's good. Until you taste it, it's like trying to explain to a blind man the color red. You can talk, and you know, there's no way you can explain it. So to come along and say religion brings happiness, where does it bring happiness? I don't understand it. This is a gamble that you have to take. You know, somebody said that maybe Shlomo HaMelech made one mistake in his life. Shlomo HaMelech very, very clearly points out Tahat HaShemesh, things that are under the sun cannot bring simcha. But things that are above the sun, that's called religion. That's where bliss is found. That's where joy is found. That's where happiness is found. Adam HaRishon, he named every animal in Gan Eden. He called a dog a Kelev. And he called the donkey a Hamor, and he called the horse a Sus. And the Midrash points out that there was a brilliance in being able to name the animals. It wasn't that Adam HaRishon arbitrarily picked names for the animals. He looked at the animal and he saw its essence, and he named it a word that's becoming and befitting of the essence of that animal. For example, when he saw the first dog of creation, he was able to look at it like with the x-ray vision and see the nature of a dog, that it's what we say today, man's best friend. It's a warm animal. It's a friendly animal. Not the dogs that I come in contact with, but there's a dog, a lassie. You know. So he calls it a kelev. Kelev is made up of the word lev. It has a heart. It has feelings. And he went through every single animal like that. And then it came to naming human beings. After psychoanalyzing and figuring out what the essence of man is, he calls himself Adam. Why? Because he's a product of the Adama, of the ground. Now, isn't that a very base name? You couldn't call us a Neshama. You couldn't call us Selim Elokim, something positive. You're calling man dirt. You call man earth, earthling. And the explanation is because Adam HaRishon said that's the essence of man. He's like dirt where he comes from. The ground constantly is involved in growth. And that's what man is. He is a being that by nature must always be involved in growing. And so long as he's growing, he's fulfilling his mission. And when people are fulfilling their mission and they're achieving their goals, there's happiness. But if man is stagnant, and man's spiritual career is on halt, so he's not fulfilling, he's not Adama. If Samson or Farlhurst says the word simha, its root comes from the word someyach. Someyach means to grow. Growth leads to happiness. Not growth of wealth, not growth of things. Growth in spirituality. Someyach leads to simcha. And that's why, if you ever notice, that's why children are always happy. Because children are always growing. Every single day a child learns something new, sees something that he didn't see the day before, experiences new things. So the child, his growth is, percentage-wise, it's very fast. So he's always happy, because he's growing. When man stops to learn, and man stops to advance, and does not get closer to his goals of spirituality, and he's stunted, so he becomes depressed. Doesn't matter how much money he has, by the way. Doesn't matter how big his home is, nor what type of car he drives. He's not fulfilling his mission. But I cannot deny to you that there is a problem with what we're saying here tonight. I must raise the problems also, just to be fair. Somebody might walk out and say, I don't know what the rabbi's talking, he's preaching some ha. It's not up to me to be Sameha. Could you control when you're in a good mood or a bad mood? I mean, do you decide and say, well, listen, here's my week. I think Sunday, Monday, I'm going to be in a good mood. Tuesday, I think I'm going to plan to be in a bad mood. Wednesday afternoon, I'll be in a good mood. We don't plan our mood swings. You wake up in the morning, you're in a good mood. The guy wakes up on the wrong side of the bed, he's in a bad mood. You can control this. There's hormones, there's things. So how could you preach to a guy, be happy? If I'm happy, I'll be happy. If I'm not happy, I won't be happy. The answer to that is, if the Torah demands us to be happy, must be it's not out of our control. It must be, it's doable. It's not like the Torah telling you, you must have green eyes. You have it, you have it. You don't have it, you're out. Happiness must be something that is doable. Otherwise, God can't command it. That's where we differ with the secular. The secularists tell us it's an emotion. You know, it's day to day. We say no. And now to the practice. We're talking vague till now. Spirituality, religion. Give me, Rabbi, explain what you mean when you say that. The Hafetz Chaim, I think, puts it in the greatest perspective, what we're talking about. He gives an example with a king. We don't relate to kings like they did in the olden days, so the mashal is not as potent. Imagine you were called by one of the wealthiest men in the world. Alav HaShalom, one of the most influential men in our community, was a man by the name of Edmund Safra, Alav HaShalom. He owned a banks, wielded power, he had influence. He was almost inaccessible. Top man. Imagine if Mr. Safra would call you on the phone and say, please, could you come to my office at the bank? I need to ask you for a favor, and if you could execute it, to make me very happy. It's unbelievable. How excited are you? He called me and all the people in the world, all his employees, they called me to come out. And you sit down with him in his office and say, please, if you could do this for me, of course I'll pay you whatever the money is, of course, but it'll bring me a lot of happiness. And you go and you do it. And as you're doing it, you turn around and you see Mr. Safra smiling and he's happy. What type of feeling do you have? You're ecstatic. Look, I gave pleasure to one of the most powerful men in the world. A man that has everything, that knows everyone, that everybody who serves him. And it gave him pleasure. Says the Hafetz Chaim, and let's say the one that you're giving pleasure to owns every bank, not one bank, and doesn't own 5-6 buildings in Manhattan, owns every piece of real estate in the world. The greatest real estate developer in the world is God. The world is his property. Is there any bigger portfolio than that? He owns everything. Everything's his. And all the money is his, and all the power is his. Imagine you had a meeting with Powell or Bush. And you're talking to them intimately about Iraq and wars. You're talking to people that are control the greatest military might. God doesn't control one army and controls all the armies of the world. He doesn't control one air force, he controls all the air force, all the navies. And now God calls you into his office, says the Hafetz Chaim, he says, please come here, you have to do me a favor. And if you could execute it, it'll give me a lot of pleasure. And right away you're thinking, you called me? There's a billion Chinese people in the world. And you called me, a Jew, we're a minority of a minority. And he tells you, just please, tomorrow morning, if you could put on this pair of tefillin, make me happy. So You're thrilled. The most influential power in the world came and asked you for something, and he instructed you, and then you go do it. And as you're turning around, you're putting on your tefillin, you see God smiling. You tell me what type of ecstasy is that? That you brought happiness to God, that you impressed the boss. Simcha shel mitzvah. That you were given instructions that nobody was given, that give God nahat ruach. I'm not talking about the reward that you're going to get. That in itself is the reward of the mitzvah. The Hafetz Chaim says that's what we're talking about. Religion brings happiness. When you're fulfilling mitzvot and know the pleasure and the happiness that you're giving to God, what type of happiness enters your system? The Gemara tells stories of a rabbi that used to pray at sunrise every morning, and a smile never left his face the whole day. He was so excited. He made the sunrise. That was in the days where you didn't have watches and clocks on the wall, atomic clocks that you're praying exactly when the sunrise, it's there. You had the sundial and you had to know, and it's a calculation, and to pray Netzach Hamah was a... It took effort. Not only to get up, but to calculate. So on the days that he made the nets, he was smiling the whole day. I gave God pleasure. I prayed it the first time possible. I was the first online. I said, how? That's where it comes from. So the Arizal says that his level that he reached in religion was all from Simcha shel mitzvah. From the happiness that he had by serving God. Not enough to serve God. Must be b'simcha. So you're going to tell me... So you tell me that's fine. I accept it. But what about earthly pleasures? I mean, we got to go to work. We can't be doing mitzvot all day long. I mean... On the contrary, the majority of the day we're in the marketplace. To that I answer you a thought that I saw from one of the later rabbis. The Gemara teaches us that a father has some obligations towards his son. One of the obligations is he has to teach his son Torah. He also must teach his son Umanut. Umanut is a trade. The Gemara says he also must teach his son how to swim. So one of the rabbis asks, why swimming? Why not self-defense? First aid? Karate? Taekwondo? Why'd they pick swimming? So I saw, they say there's a connection between teaching your son a trade and teaching him how to swim. That's why the Gemara juxtaposes both of these together. A swimmer has his entire body in the water, and he churns vigorously with his arms and legs in order to propel himself. But one thing, a swimmer constantly must lift his head out of the water so he doesn't drown. That's swimming. When we teach our children a trade, we must teach them that to succeed in business, it's like swimming. One must strain every fiber in his body to succeed. But he must remember not to drown in it. He must keep his head out. If the business becomes an obsession, where he's in it totally, where that's his only mission and only goal in life, to be successful in business, it's going to breed depression. So they tell the son, but you keep your head out of water, like we taught you in swimming lessons, in business the same. Don't be consumed by it. Your head must be in the yeshiva. Your head must be in the synagogue. Your head must be in the shiur. Then the rest of your body can be elsewhere. It's yigiyah kapecha. It's limited to the hands. But don't let the mind sink into it. In conclusion, that year, the inauguration ceremony, I don't know if you realize, those 7 days that they celebrated, Yom Kippur was right in the middle of the party. And the Gemara says something actually shocking. It says that year, the Jews ate and drank on Yom Kippur, including Shlomo HaMelech. Imagine that, eat and drink on Kippur. How amazing is it? And a heavenly voice came from Shamayim and said, not to worry, Kullechem mizumanim lachaye olam abba. You're all going to gain eternity. You think to yourself, what could be more important than Kippur? What can override Kippur? And the answer is Simcha Shel Mitzvah. They were rejoicing in the Beit HaMikdash, celebrating a mitzvah. They were dancing out of joy that we now have an abode for God. It was a religious celebration. God says that is even higher than Kippur. What could be higher than Kippur? Simcha Shel Mitzvah. Such a celebration can even eclipse the importance of Kippur. You don't need a Kippur this year. You're doing better. And that's what the Arizal said when he said the name Yom Kippurim. He said Kippurim literally means Kippurim. It's like Purim. Yom Kippur is like Purim. That says that Purim is the real day. Kippur is only like Purim. And the explanation is because on Purim, that's when we're involved in Simcha Shel Mitzvah. With the eating and the drinking and the singing and the dancing and the mitzvot, the Mishloach Manot and the Matanot Evyonim and the Se'udah and the Megillah, we're fulfilling mitzvot and we're exuberated with joy. That is even greater than Kippur. Purim is like the Kippur that they celebrated at the inauguration of the Beit HaMikdash. When God comes after a Purim and tells the Jewish people, Kulechem mezumanim lachaye olam abba. But the music, don't underestimate the power of music. Music has a spiritual power that can strike the chords of the neshama and bring it to high levels. Navi tells us David HaMelech, as a prerequisite to his prophecies, would have the violinist play. Keep in mind, the Leviim would play music in the Beit HaMikdash. The music in the Beit HaMikdash is not a club. When they need singers, it's not a... And the explanation is that to inspire the Kohanim and to inspire the Leviim, you needed to hear good Jewish music. Chas v'shalom, it wasn't rap, or some type of rock and roll in the Beit HaMikdash that would only inspire rowdiness and bedlam. It would only bring out the animalistic part of the person. The Jewish music has something to say about it. Incidentally, that's why Ahasuerus, at his famous party, he had everything. Rabbis tell us he had Jewish food, he had kosher wine, but he didn't have Jewish music. And the rabbis tell us because Ahasuerus knew the power of Jewish music. He said, if I have a good Jewish band at this party, the Jews will make the Shuvah on the spot to leave. You know, I can't give them anything that can affect their neshama. So that's what Purim is all about. And that's why Be'adar Marbim B'Simcha. It's a month filled with mitzvot. And then after Purim, a month later, you have Pesach. There's tens of mitzvot that are fulfilled on the holiday. It's a time of year where we're able to give God great pleasure. And there's nothing more rewarding to a person that's growing getting closer to God through the performance of His instructions, through His mitzvot. It is of a spiritual nature. It is above the sun. It is lema'ala min ha-shemesh. And this is what we say in the Megillah. Layhudim ha'ita ora v'simha v'sason v'kar. And this is what we're striving for. We have 2 weeks before Purim to work on it. So we can reach that day. We will reach an apex of feeling that connection, feeling that true joy. God willing, we'll be able to carry the ecstasy and excitement from these 2 months of Simcha. We'll be able to carry it a year long. And even in the months where we must turn the pilot of Simcha down like an Av, when we're mema'atim, but it's still nonetheless with Simcha, although on a lower level. But it is these months where we're setting the emotional stability for the year. And now we know exactly what unfortunately most Americans don't know. The pursuit of happiness and where it can be found and how it can be acquired. Its source is Shenehenu Meziva Shechina. Its source is from basking in the radiance of the Divine Presence, each one according to his level. Yirason, it be the will that we're able to accomplish this not only theoretically, which is quite difficult, but we take the plunge into challenging and tasting and seeing Ta'amu ur'u kitov, that is indeed good. And religion is the answer to many of the maladies of life, and it can add a dimension that no other thing under the sun can supply. Nayhudim ayta ora v'simcha v'sason v'kar. Baruch Adonai le'olam, amen v'amen.